You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily podcast on the Minnesota Timberwolves, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Ben Beacon. I'm the brand new host of Locked On Wolves. I've been one of the editors at Dunking with Wolves, the Timberwolves blog on the Fansided Network, for going on about 7 years. Also a staff writer at Grandstand Central, contributed in a variety of places across the sports blog landscape. So no stranger to, I guess, the sports blogosphere, especially related to the Timberwolves. Now that I've had spent several years on the writing side, I'm super excited to contribute on the audio side as well in a more permanent location. And what better year to start on the Locked On Wolves podcast than this one? A new Gerson Rosas-led regime, Ryan Saunders at the helm, intriguing offseason. Maybe not exactly the offseason that Timberwolves fans thought we were going to get when we got into the summer, but a fun one nonetheless. We're going to spend the first few podcasts here at Locked On Wolves after yours truly is taking over, focusing on recapping the offseason a little bit, since we are a little bit behind here. Got to talk through everything that's happened since Rosas took over a couple months ago. So we're going to recap a little bit in terms of what has happened so far with Rosas on board, what has gone down related to the draft, and Summer League and everything that's happened since then, and also go through all the staffing changes that have happened in at Mayo Clinic Square in downtown Minneapolis. First, we're going to look at Rosas himself today and what he appears to be as a leader of the organization and where this organization is headed with him at the helm. We're going to talk through some of the staff changes, as I mentioned, the front office, some of the impressive names that have been brought in, as well as taking a look at the coaching staff surrounding Ryan Saunders and what that's going to look like. And then earlier this week, or I guess late last week, the over-unders came out in Las Vegas. So we're going to take a look at the Timberwolves number and potential for an over, whether the Timberwolves could be over or under that number here in the 2019-20 season. So that's what we'll have today. My first ever live read here for Locked On Wolves is a good one. Support of Locked On Wolves today comes from Manscaped, number one in men's below-the-belt grooming. You may have seen Manscaped on Shark Tank. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code LOCKEDON at manscaped.com. That's 20% at manscaped.com with promo code LOCKEDON. All right. So we're going to go ahead and talk a little bit about Rosas in general. It was just a few weeks after the season when Glenn Taylor elected to hire Gerson Rosas. You know, he's got his extensive history with the Houston Rockets, has been there for essentially his whole career, save for a few months that he was hired away by the Dallas Mavericks a few years ago that didn't go very well, evidently wasn't a fit. Rosas headed back to the Rockets as, I think his title was Vice President of Basketball Operations under Daryl Morey there, and has interviewed for a number of front office jobs before coming to the Timberwolves. Needless to say, he's extremely qualified for the role. But what Timberwolves fans should have seen so far is that he appears to be an extremely effective communicator, and not just in a, you know, a snake oil salesman type of way with the media and with the fans, but fans, players, media alike all seem to truly enjoy Gerson Rosas and what he appears to bring to the table. And most importantly, Glenn Taylor, Timberwolves owner, appears to really think that Rosas, clearly, I mean, he hired him. He obviously thinks he's the guy for the job, but to kind of bridge the gap between each area of the organization. He's not just going to be, you know, he's obviously a very different personality than Tom Thibodeau, I guess is one way of putting it. He's not going to lock himself in his office. He's not going to, you know, wall himself off from the media, anything like that. Clearly, Rosas is somebody who can bridge the proverbial gap between all areas of the organization, the sports or the basketball side and the business side, the media side, the fan side. That's honestly what a team needs in this day and age is somebody that can effectively communicate to all sides of the business and can carry out what the owner wants him to do, as well as what's best for the team from a basketball perspective. Clearly, culture is important to Rosas. That's something that, you know, the Rockets have built an impressive culture over the years. Rosas was on the front lines of that. So having him in the front office in Minnesota and establishing his own culture is extremely important. Obviously, the last 8 to 10 weeks or however long it's been since Rosas was hired, the Timberwolves have been active in a variety of ways, whether it be on the free agent front, on the staffing front, in terms of front office and coaching staff, like we'll talk about here in a moment. The players have been in the building at Mayo Clinic Square, at Target Center, in Minnesota, a lot more than they have in recent years. It's probably been since, I don't know, the Rick Adelman years or even before that, when players were really active at the facility in the off season. And so to see, you know, not just the young guys, but also, you know, Karl Anthony Towns has been in town at one point or another. Jeff Teague and Robert Covington were rehabbing injuries, but both were stuck around and practiced and helped with the summer league team. You know, a bunch of the guys who were undrafted or on training camp deals, or I guess deals that extended into the summer, you know, hung around the facility and were there and are still there. And you'll see that with all the rookies that are part of the team moving forward as well. That speaks to something. That speaks to the culture. It speaks to what they're trying to build. It may seem like nothing, but it's not nothing. It clearly matters that the players want to be there and want to be around each other. The other thing about Rosas that's pretty apparent is he's going to pick the right time to strike. And maybe there isn't enough data yet to see that for sure, because he hasn't really, I guess, struck, if you want to consider striking, you know, making a huge move. Obviously, Tom Thibodeau was extremely patient. He waited over a year before making any sort of a big move and then went all in with both feet with a Jimmy Butler trade. Rosas tried with D'Angelo Russell. He tried to acquire him. He allegedly, you know, was talking to a number of different people in the league, had Karl Anthony Towns recruiting. So he's trying to be aggressive in the same way the Houston Rockets always have been under Daryl Morey. And while Rosas was there and trying to get superstars in the fold, but he wasn't. He didn't make the mistake when he struck out on Russell. Rosas didn't make the mistake of locking up the cap space on long-term deals or overpaying for a middling type player, a guy who may have been the second or third best player on the team, for instance, but wouldn't have moved the needle significantly. Rosas knows he's already got a couple bad contracts in Andrew Wiggins and Gorgui Dieng and a hefty expiring one in Jeff Teague. And everybody else he added was a plus player. For the most part, that at least the guys that are going to play in the rotation at the start of the year are plus players on affordable 1 or 2 year deals, from Shabazz Napier to Jake Layman to Noah Vonleh to Jordan Bell. All those guys are going to have a positive impact and not negatively impact the cap moving forward. So obviously the jury is still out on a lot of what Rosas is going to be up to here moving forward. But he clearly has been smart and judicious with his cap space to this point. All right, we're going to talk a little bit about the staff changes that Gerson Rosas has made since coming on board with the Timberwolves. And it has been sweeping changes. The only, obviously, former interim head coach Ryan Saunders ended up staying on as permanent head coach. And former GM Scott Layden, I believe his title's still GM, or he might be, he might have a different title now, I guess, but he's still under contract. And last we've heard is he's still with the team. But a number of scouts were let go. And there was really kind of a sweeping culture change in the Timberwolves front office and on the coaching staff. So we'll talk about the front office first. There were a couple of hires. I guess this is mostly in order of when they were, the hirings were actually announced, but Gianluca Pascucci was hired as assistant GM a while back. Actually, it was, I don't recall when the team actually announced it, but it was reported in the media before the draft even, but a ways back. And he most recently was with the Brooklyn Nets. And clearly there's some connections there with a lot of the moves the Timberwolves were trying to make in terms of D'Angelo Russell, and then the ultimate move that was made, bringing Shabazz Napier and Trevion Graham on board in Minnesota. So Pascucci obviously has a connection there. With the Nets, he was their director of global scouting and had an extremely solid reputation. And before that was with the Houston Rockets as their director of player personnel, which meant that obviously he worked closely with Gerson Rosas. So there is quite a bit of connection there. So it makes sense that he would be the selection. Pascucci, there's a number of things that he has been credited with. One of those moves was scouting and then advocating for Rudonis Kirokas with the Nets last year, who had a solid year as a rookie, as just a 20-year-old as the team got back to the playoffs. Pascucci is going to be a really important piece of the front office, obviously, and that Rosas connection is clearly really strong. And then just announced this week, but reported almost 2 months ago, was Sachin Gupta, who was hired away from the Detroit Pistons. Gupta is actually the father of the ESPN trade machine, if you will, and since then has been with the Philadelphia 76ers and continued to have a really strong reputation as a talent evaluator and obviously as an analyst. And that's where he got his in the league. So obviously there's a lot of pluses there in terms of him being in the front office, very different from the type of front office hire that previous regimes, really any previous regime with the Timberwolves would have made. And Gupta most recently was with the Pistons, I think only for a season. So he's bounced around just a little bit, but again, an analytical guy, a background, I think it was MIT that he had attended, and had met Rosas a long time ago and Daryl Morey a long time ago before breaking into the league. So a lot of history there, a lot of, again, the theme of culture change is really prevalent. And just so exciting to see those types of minds, those types of basketball and analytical minds being added to the Timberwolves front office, which is not what fans are necessarily used to. In terms of coaching staff, that's where things even got a little bit more just different than what we're used to. Whereas Tom Thibodeau brought the majority of his staff from his previous stop with the Chicago Bulls. Before that, Flip Saunders brought on a number of the same assistant coaches he had in his various stops in the past with the Timberwolves, Pistons, and Washington Wizards. And before that, Rick Adelman brought over a lot of the same guys he had worked with from Jack Sikma to, I'm not going to remember all the names off the top of my head, but there were like four guys he brought with him from Houston that had coached with him in Houston and previous stops as well. Ryan Saunders is a new head coach. He didn't have, other than the end of last year, bringing in Jerry Seestein, who is an old buddy of his dad's, of Flip's. Ryan Saunders really had the opportunity to hire a new staff. And clearly, Rosas had his fingerprints on some of these hires, but no doubt that the two were working closely together. Not in any particular order, but the Timberwolves hired David Vanterpool as their associate head coach. He was essentially the defensive coordinator for the Portland Trailblazers, and had interviewed for the full-time head coaching job with the Wolves that ended up going to Saunders. Vanterpool obviously had a big hand in CJ McCollum and Damian Lillard developing as a duo, a backcourt duo that worked on both ends of the floor, especially on offense, but also Portland having a middle of the pack or better defense over the past few years, despite starting a really small backcourt and having kind of a revolving door in some sense in the front court due to injuries and some strange decisions they made contract wise in Portland. But along with Terry Stotts, who's a fantastic coach, Vanterpool played a huge part in their success. I think if D'Angelo Russell, if the Wolves had been able to land him, there was no doubt some thought to Vanterpool being a great coach for Russell and helping him improve defensively and within the team concept. Paolo Prigioni would be the quote-unquote offensive coordinator. He was the player development coach last year with the Brooklyn Nets, and there's obviously more connections there between Prigioni and Pascucci, the new assistant GM, and also between Prigioni and D'Angelo Russell, who, again, the Wolves tried to acquire, and Prigioni was no doubt involved in that recruiting process. It also means Prigioni coached Shabazz Napier and Travion Graham last year in Brooklyn, and is thought of as a brilliant offensive mind, somebody who's on the forefront of understanding analytics in the game and just how important, some of the things that many teams have known for 10 years and have been practicing for 10 years, but is going to sound like music to the ears of a Timberwolves fan who knows that the Wolves haven't necessarily trended in that direction. But Prigioni, if anybody watched any of the Las Vegas Summer League Wolves, they were coached by Prigioni and they played offense as you would expect. I'll just say it, a Houston Rockets team would play, not in terms of actual efficiency, but in terms of intention when it comes to their shot selection. I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but the Summer Wolves didn't shoot non-paint twos. They only shot threes. They shot the ball in the paint. They got to the free throw line, and they won their first seven games or first six games before losing in the finals in the championship game. So clearly Prigioni is going to bring that offense that's three-point heavy, scoring in the paint, shooting free throws, to the Timberwolves, and he's going to have a huge hand in working directly with the players as someone who only retired from the game a few years ago. Other kind of unsung offensive, or excuse me, coaching staff hires, Brian Gates was with the team a few years ago and has been with Sacramento the last few years, but is back in Minnesota. He is a coach for Team Canada, so there's a connection there with Andrew Wiggins, and then also he had been here I think for the first year, maybe 2 years of Karl-Anthony Towns' career. Gates was credited early on in Anthony Davis's career with helping him develop, and clearly there was some positive connections with Wiggins and Towns in Minnesota as well, enough so for them to bring Gates back. Kevin Hansen was announced as a new hire just this week, or maybe not announced, but reported by someone in the media, his former New Orleans Pelicans coach, who obviously would have worked with Anthony Davis quite a bit there. Max LaFever as the new lead video coordinator and associate player development coach. Interesting there. He was the former, I believe, director of personnel with the Texas Tech Red Raiders, where Timberwolves first-round pick Jarrett Culver played. So there's a clear pattern of trying to make the players more comfortable, whether it be LaFever with Jarrett Culver, Brian Gates, Andrew Wiggins, Prigioni with his connections with the former Nets players. There's an obvious move in the direction of making the players feel more comfortable, believing that they'll perform at their best when they are comfortable. That's going to be one of the keys to helping them develop their skills. Certainly a pivot from the last regime, from Thibodeau and his style and the way that things were gone about under him. We'll see how this approach pans out, but it seems to thus far be getting positive reviews. Again, I think the players being around the facility in the off season and a lot of the positivity coming out of Target Center and out of Mayo Clinic Square kind of tells you all you need to know about the way that things are trending and what the players think of the staff changes. All right, our last segment today, we're going to talk a little bit about the early release of the over-under win totals by Vegas. It came out a little over a week ago, and where the Timberwolves opened at compared to some of the other teams in the West, and just a real quick look at whether or not that line is fair and what I think they'll do if they'll finish over or under their projected total from Vegas based on, standing here on August 1st, August 2nd, looking at what the roster looks like compared to the rest of the league. Obviously, some things can still change, probably not significantly, but, this isn't by any means a final prediction. But given the early line, the Timberwolves' projected win total by, I'm looking at Bovada's line, has them at 35.5 wins for the 2019-20 season. They won 36 games last year, for some perspective. So if they did exactly what they did last year, they'd finish over. And my first instinct was, well, I guess I had Jimmy Butler to start the year. So, maybe that gave him a bump. Well, they were 4-9 in games with Jimmy Butler on the roster, and I know he sat out a couple of games due to infamously due to general soreness. But 4-9 with Butler on the roster, which means that no, that didn't give them a bump. Also, remember that they had Robert Covington for roughly a month, maybe 5 weeks before he got hurt on New Year's Eve, and he didn't play again. Covington is probably the second best player on this roster, the second best all-around player after Karl-Anthony Towns. So it's significant if he's healthy again this year. Yes, they lost starting power forward Taj Gibson. They lost Dario Saric, who was actually a starting power forward at the end of the year, and Tyus Jones, who is one of the better backup point guards in the league. But the belief here is that the drop-off from Jones to Shabazz Napier isn't that large. Napier's going to, you know, not be quite as good on defense, but he's a better offensive player in terms of at least a better three-point shooter. And with the way the Wolves are going to play, Napier's probably a better fit for the system. In a vacuum, I think Tyus Jones is the better player, but I don't know that replacing him with Napier really hurts the projected win total all that much. The other thing that you can bank on, I shouldn't say bank on, but the other thing we should be able to bank on is Jeff Teague only played, I think, 42, maybe 43 games last year as a career low, and he wasn't very good when he did play. He's on the wrong side of his prime and in the last year of his contract, but I wouldn't think he has as bad of a year this year as he did last year. If he plays somewhere in the neighborhood of what he's done for his career, stays relatively healthy, and has Napier as his primary backup, that position is okay. Power forward is probably going to be manned by a combination of Robert Covington playing power forward, the Wolves running three wings, and then also Noah Vonleh, and Jordan Bell will probably play some at the four as well, even though he mostly played the five in Golden State. Probably not as good, again, in a vacuum as Taj Gibson, but with how the Wolves are going to play this year, Vonleh was a solid player for the Knicks last year on a bad Knicks team. Jordan Bell was a solid player for a good Warriors team in limited minutes the last 2 years. Obviously, every situation is different, but it's hard to say that that's going to be a significant drop-off. Then you have to factor in natural improvement from Karl-Anthony Towns, who took a step forward again last year on defense, had a rough start to the season offensively, but picked it up quite a bit in the second half, had that stretch in March where he was essentially the best player in the league, the best offensive player in the league for 3-4 weeks. So all those things put together, this probably is, you know, that line's not crazy low, but I think it's low. I would definitely hit the over at this point. Sitting here right now, I'm thinking this is a 40, maybe 42 win team. So roughly 500. It's probably not enough to get in the playoffs in the West right now. In fact, Bovada has only three teams in the West below the Timberwolves on their over-under in terms of win totals, excuse me. So it has, let's see here. So Bovada's got Memphis, the Memphis Grizzlies at 27.5 wins. They have the Phoenix Suns at 26.5 wins. And there was one other team that's below the Wolves. I lost it. The Pelicans slightly over the Wolves at 37.5. The Kings slightly over the Wolves at 36.5. I guess maybe the Wolves were the third lowest. I thought there was one other team. But with the Wolves as the third lowest win total in the West and barely behind the Kings and the Pelicans, you know, the West is going to be, it's good every year, but it's going to be extremely good this year with the upgrades the Clippers have made as well as the Lakers. The Jazz have probably only gotten better. The Pelicans aren't going to be terrible despite losing their best player, one of the top five or six players in the league. So, yeah, it's going to be real difficult for the Timberwolves to make the playoffs, and that's not the prediction here, at least not at this point. But I think the over is probably a fairly safe bet. The Eastern Conference is also, you know, going to be terrible again this year. There were 3, 4, 5, 6, looks like 6 teams slotted to have less wins than the Timberwolves, according to Vegas, just in the Eastern Conference. And the Wolves have struggled enough with the East in recent years. At some point, that pendulum has to swing back. I just think it's too low. And I'm sure it's every bit as much a reflection of how tough the West is this year, how tough the West will be this year, as much as it is about the Wolves. But I just have a tough time seeing how this team got significantly worse in the offseason. I think they're going to be in a pretty good spot moving forward. And as mentioned earlier, I mean, they're going to have cap flexibility too. So any number of things could happen in season at the trade deadline. But I've got to believe that number is a little bit low. All right, that's all we have for today. We're going to be back here. Again, Locked On Wolves is your daily podcast. It's where you're going to get your Wolves news daily throughout the offseason. So check back. We're going to be going through each of the position groups and the depth chart, kind of exploring where we stand today at the start of August, what the Wolves have done to shore up each position, what the rotation could look like. And then we'll get into some predictions as well as we get closer to September. We're still, roughly 6 to 7 weeks out from real live basketball, media day, all that good stuff. So in the meantime, keep it tuned here to Locked On Wolves, part of Locked On Podcast Network. Again, my name is Ben Beacon. I'm your new host for the podcast. We'll catch you next time.